Hi, and welcome to Deep Dive with Jamie Stein, where we take a deep dive look at all things reality TV, pop culture, and the world at large. I'm an intuitive and an empath, which means I pick up on the thoughts, feelings, and energy percolating in other people and the world around me. I believe there is meaning waiting to be found at every turn, if you're willing to see it. So join me as we dismantle everything from trash TV to high spiritual concepts and learn more about ourselves, each other, and how we're all connected. Hey everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Deep Dive with Jamie Stein. Really excited about this episode today. It's been an episode that's been brewing in my consciousness for a little while. In some ways, it's very on track with usual content in the sense that we are definitely going to be blending spirituality and issues of the soul with our other favorite topic, reality television and pop culture. But we're doing it in a little bit of a different way than usual. So I'm going to explain all that in a second when we bring out our guest. But just to contextualize this a little bit, I want to just point out heading into this episode that for me, my deeper intention in really exploring all of this material, exploring the deeper levels of the psyche with all of you, is really to explore this notion of what it means to have a soul's journey in this lifetime. I'm assuming most people who listen to this podcast would consider themselves spiritual to some degree, or there's at least an interest in spirituality and spiritualism. And so it's this idea that our souls incarnate in these human lifetimes for a reason. That there are particular themes or lessons that we're here to learn about or to master, and that our souls choose these particular identities in order to learn and master specific themes. So it's true. It's almost like casting a play or a movie. It's this idea that truly our identities in this lifetime, our parents, the time period, the circumstances we were born into are all kind of set up in a way to give our souls a breeding ground to run into certain types of conflicts, certain types of dramas, and by virtue of going through those conflicts in those dramas, we can learn lessons from them. And that these lessons then help to advance our overall spiritual consciousness from lifetime to lifetime to lifetime. And that's why, in a way, I'm always calling reality TV the simulation within the simulation, because I always kind of see it as a metaphor for this type of journey, in the sense that you could think of this world or these lifetimes as one big reality show, right? Like each reality show has a certain premise. The roles get filled. There's a certain kind of context or construct, we could call it predestination, that's set up in each show where we're saying, okay, we're going to explore what it means to be a Real Housewife of New York, and we're going to put Luann in there, we're going to put Ramona in there, we're going to put Dorinda in there. And yeah, you know what? There's going to be certain loose storylines, and they're going to go on a trip at some point together. But then within that construct, the women have free will. And they get to really kind of run amok in this little reality TV simulation experiment. They get to bump up against each other. They get to run into unforeseen circumstances. They get to get into conflict. And then they get to use their free will to determine how they navigate this conflict. And will they double down and continue a certain type of suffering? Will they level up and rise to the occasion and get learning out of it? These are the questions that we sit with as viewers. But again, to me, it's kind of like a big metaphor for what we're doing in these lifetimes, where our souls kind of get set up in our own little simulations, in our little experiments. There's certain themes or perhaps predestined points that we're going to hit along the way, but then we're using our free will to see if we're able to navigate the conflicts, the challenges, the dramas in a way where we can get deeper learning. And part of why I love using reality TV to explore these themes and issues is because it really gives us a chance, especially now, to watch people over a long period of time bump up against certain limitations, bump up against familiar conflicts, we get a chance to really watch people play out what I like to refer to as their patterns in life. So we get to see Vicki Gunvalson on The Real Housewives of Orange County go from her failing marriage to Don, to her turbulent relationship with Brooks, to her turbulent relationship with Steve. And we get to see the types of choices she's making over and over again. We get to see Tom Sandoval bail on his relationship to Kristen Doty and jump ship to Ariana. And then 9 years later, we get to see him bail on his relationship to Ariana and jump ship to Raquel, now Rachel. And as many people have pointed out, if you watch him back then and watch him now, he's literally saying some of the exact same things. He's trapped in his pattern. And so again, just to broaden this out for a moment before I bring out our guest, this to me is the essence of the soul's journey. It's we get set up to perhaps be wounded in certain types of ways. And then in the place of our wounds, we unconsciously create these patterns, these storylines that we come up against over and over. And I think that's why I'm always talking about the invitation that life is handing us. I think there's always an invitation in these patterns to work with pattern differently. So with Tom Sandoval, presumably, if he used his free will to make this choice, he could use Scandoval to navigate it for deeper understanding about himself, his wounds, why he's made these choices, and then how he wants to heal from this and do it differently moving forward, which to my mind is where mastery comes in. It's where learning comes in. Unfortunately, doesn't really look like he's doing that thus far, but we're going to hold out hope for him. So having said that, like I said, I feel like reality TV is such a great breeding ground and illustration for looking at all this. And so that's sort of what I want to do today in a very specific way. I want to today to actually focus on a topic that is near and dear to my heart, which is the topic of astrology. And I'm sure it's near and dear to a lot of people's hearts who are listening to this podcast as well. What I love about astrology is a couple things. First of all, I just think it speaks to this notion of predestination. And for me, I just love that interplay of the notion that there are certain things that are kind of set out for us in our soul's journey that, I mean, I'm sort of speaking here as a casual fan of astrology. My guest, who I'm going to bring out in a second, is an actual expert, but my sense of it is our chart kind of lays out a groundwork, and that's kind of what we're released into to sort of use our free will to navigate. And I just know for myself in my own journey, I just cannot tell you the number of times I find myself feeling a certain type of way, bumping up against something, struggling with something. And I'll check in with one of my trusted friends who's an astrologer, one of whom is today's guest. And when he reports back to me what's being revealed in my chart right now, like it just being a bullseye of what I'm dealing with. And for me, it just gives me such a sense of like context and comfort because it makes me sort of more deeply connected to this sense of there is a higher intelligence. There is a rhyme and reason to this. And even if the circumstances of my life are difficult right now to my ego in a certain type of way, or I can't see the forest through the trees quite yet, just sort of the knowledge that it doesn't mean I'm off track. And it's actually sort of reflected in this map of predestination. So it always, like I said, just gives me such comfort and such a sense of sort of connection to something sort of beyond myself. The other thing that I love about astrology, too, is I can't tell you the number of times that I'll be in a situation where, for example, I am channeling information, let's say, for a reality TV personality or someone in the public eye. And then I'll confer with someone like my guest who checks the chart and brings forward the exact same information that was coming through me. This happens to me all the time, or the number of times I'm working with a client and something comes through me and they'll say, oh yeah, like my astrologer was just saying the exact same thing. And what I love about it for me, again, it's just sort of confirmation of this notion that there is some sort of, whatever you want to call it, higher intelligence, source information. And I think there's all these different ways of accessing it. There's all these different avenues in, and it just sort of thrills me when there is that kind of overlap that you could never really predict or anticipate. So I'm a huge junkie. I've actually, small fun fact, like I thought about learning astrology because I just find it so fascinating, thrilling, and again, on point with the information that already comes through me. So Having said all that, the idea that I've had in my consciousness for a while is I'm so aware astrology, obviously, it's very well known kind of in the zeitgeist. You know, everyone's sort of familiar with it to a degree. And I feel like there are all these terms that get thrown around that people are familiar with to a degree. So we all kind of know about Mercury retrograde. We kind of have a general sense of it. We all kind of know about, for example, recently, like the solar lunar eclipse. But how many of us really sort of know what this means? And I think one of those terms that comes up a lot, myself included, is this notion of Saturn return. It's sort of a big astrological stopping point in the predestination of our lives. And again, I think a lot of us have a general sense of what it means, but I know for myself, I don't really specifically know what it means. And one thing that I've been aware of since last year is that when Scandoval broke, for someone like Raquel, now Rachel, this happened right very kind of soon, either on her Saturn return or soon thereafter. And I think I've even talked about in this podcast, oh, there's this big invitation for her. This happened right on her Saturn return. And I've had it in my head for a while, this idea of like, I would love to bring an astrologer on to really sort of get down into the nitty-gritty of what exactly is a Saturn return? What exactly do we mean by that? How does this relate to our larger soul journeys? And in more specifically, using Raquel, now Rachel, as a prime example of how this can play out in the different ways it can possibly play out. So today I'm finally making my dream a reality. And on that note, I am bringing in a very special guest. It's someone who's been a friend of mine for a while. I consider him an unofficial friend of the podcast because he's been mentioned here a few times. And he's sort of my go-to when I do want to like get curious about the charts of various reality TV people. He's like one of the first people I go to. So please welcome to the deep dive, astrologer Andy Bilotti of Astrology with Andy. Welcome, Andy.
Thank you so much for having me here. This has been, years in the making, and I can't believe that it's actually been manifested in the 3D. So I'm very happy to be here.
The stars are aligning.
Yes. And during Mercury retrograde, how fitting that something that we've talked about in the past is happening while Mercury is... And that's why I always say Mercury retrograde can bring a lot of great things, like revisiting ideas from the past and making them happen in the present.
Well, you actually, explained that to me last year, because as a lot of people know, I relocated from Los Angeles to New Mexico last year. I had first traveled to New Mexico at the end of 2022, then went back to LA, knew I didn't want to stay in LA, but didn't really know where I wanted to go from there. And it was during a Mercury retrograde that I started to get signs about going back to New Mexico. And it felt so dead on once I got those signs. And you had actually said to me at that time, well, the fact that it came back during Mercury retrograde is a telltale sign that it is a legitimate sign, because Mercury retrograde is all about reversal and things from the past coming forward again.
Yeah. And although I'm not denying the fact that, yes, Mercury retrograde can sometimes bring misunderstandings or technological issues, I always say any activity or verb that begins with the prefix RE, restart, revise, rewrite, reconsider, redo, renegotiate, whatever it may be, are the perfect things to do during Mercury retrograde. So I think there's a little bit in the zeitgeist, a little bit of too much focus on what not to do during Mercury retrograde. And I always have to remind people, true, and Mercury retrograde is actually the best time out of the entire year to do certain other things. So I do believe in every astrological phenomenon or cycle can be leveraged to your favor if you know how to do that.
Yeah, and I feel like this is largely going to speak to one of the prevailing themes of today, which I'm always really interested in, which is, the possible invitation that exists in everything that's happening, even if it's labeled, quote unquote, negative or bad to your conscious mind or to your ego. Because to your point, at this point, I actually now, in a way, really welcome Mercury retrograde for me personally as a chance to consciously slow down, to consciously surrender to what is. I kind of now almost greet it as a reprieve from any part of me that's maybe wanting to be oriented towards doing or pushing. It's like, no, because we were even talking about this a bit over Instagram recently. Like, It's so funny because I don't pay attention to a lot of what's going on in the outside world a lot of times. So a lot of times I don't even know that Mercury retrograde has even started. This was one of those times. I didn't know it was happening. All I knew was, because I am so energetically sensitive, I just, like, I felt there had been a lot of momentum in me going into it. And suddenly I kind of felt my nervous system. It almost felt like I hit a wall. And then I felt like I was kind of in molasses. And so for me, I was like, all right, this is just my cue, slow down. And then when I learned, oh, it's Mercury retrograde, it's like, oh, yes, I'm totally slowing down. I'm not putting any pressure on myself to do anything. Let me just trust this rhythm and trust this flow and then see where it wants to take me as far as coming out of Mercury retrograde in a few weeks.
Yeah, and that's a really important point because even for myself, there's times when not just this Mercury retrograde, but others, where a part of me might really want to have a conversation, but then knowing that Mercury is retrograde and telling myself, you know what, why don't you wait maybe 10 days to have that conversation? There's a lot of power in not being so reactive and understanding that let me just sit with this. And then by the time Mercury retrograde ends, I might have a whole different perspective on the conversation that I wanted to have. And I'm grateful that I had the space to let things fully digest and like metabolize within me.
Exactly. And so you're speaking again to the very essence of this reframing process where I think sometimes in a reactive way, we want to interpret certain circumstances of our lives as impediments just because it's not what our ego wants. But to your point, if you actually surrender to what's here and trust it as part of your larger process, even in the discomfort or in the kind of like, just maybe it's not always graceful or easeful, but trusting there is something for you to get out of that process. And by the time you arrive at that destination point, you're so much different for it because of the process that you've gone through.
Exactly. Yes. 100%.
It always reminds me of, you know, and I'm aware we haven't even gotten to the main topic yet, but it always reminds me of, I'm always talking about the movie The Matrix with my clients, the original one with Keanu Reeves, well, they all had Keanu Reeves, but the original one way back when in the late 90s, because I love Neo's arc in that as a metaphor where, if you recall, the whole movie is set up around whether he's the one, whether he's the one, whether he's the one. And then what happens is he goes to the Oracle and the Oracle says, you're not the one. So that sort of dream is sort of dashed and taken from him. And then what's so interesting is in this place where he no longer believes he's the one, Lawrence Fishburne's character, Morpheus, then gets kidnapped because Keanu Reeves does not think he's the one. He's willing to surrender and put his own life on the line to save Morpheus because he believes Morpheus is more important than him. And it's literally that act of willingness, selflessness, and courageousness that then facilitates him becoming the one. But he never would have stepped into being the one had he not first gone through that journey where he had to kind of like give up his dream of being the one. And again, sort of dealing with the bruise to his ego. So I just sort of love that as a metaphor of sort of the grace and the space that can open up when we actually surrender to what's here. And again, don't reactively react to it as this is an impediment. This is a disappointment. This is whatever, like whatever. Again, I hate this word, but like the negative interpretation, but instead sort of, it's just all a part of my process. This is all taking me somewhere. This is all taking me somewhere. This is all taking me somewhere.
Yeah. And that's something that comes up a lot in readings where I always say, I'm very conscious of the fact that I never want to fall into toxic positivity. It's not about that, but it's about realizing that within every challenge, there's an opportunity to at least reflect on something. I really don't like, sometimes in astrology, there's this prevailing notion that, well, for the next year, just kind of grin and bear it. But that's a lost opportunity because even though you might go through something that is difficult, there are supposed to be moments of reflection and moments of maybe you thinking about what's the lesson here? What am I supposed to be taking away from this? And it's not saying, you know, be grateful for the fact that your life is currently in shambles. It's not that. But it's about realizing, it's not about feeling responsible, but taking accountability for how did I end up here? Mm-hmm. Which is not to say that you're at fault or to blame, but what role did you play? And when you have that awareness, you can then no longer be in that role moving forward.
Yeah, and I would add, and sometimes I think part of the journey is that we are meant to feel some of these feelings that are more difficult. So to your point about not bypassing, yeah, I think sometimes you have to give yourself space to be in the rage, to be in the disappointment, to be in the heartbreak. And again, to remember, you know, I mean, bringing this back to the soul perspectives, we are here as human beings to feel this huge range of feelings and emotions. I mean, again, that's sort of what we're doing here. This is sort of the beauty and the drama of life, right? Because from a spiritual perspective, if we were just meant to kind of be living in a spiritual bypass of just love and light and enlightenment all the time, well, what's the fuck is the point of coming down here in the first place? We would just stay up in the divine kingdom where everything's great. We're meant to come down here and experience these limitations. And, you know, as difficult as this might sound, I think some lifetimes are meant to be harder than others. I mean, again, some of the lessons, some of the teachings are a little bit harder earned than others. But yeah, I think the willingness to keep showing up to meeting what's here. And I think, you know, the refinement I would bring into this is not letting quote unquote difficult, uncomfortable, or more painful feelings or emotions keep you trapped in a story, like that this is all it's ever going to be, or this is evidence that my life sucks. That's kind of the story you can go to versus, again, actually, there's just something here for me to feel. And I'm always thinking in terms of pattern, right? So I think when things hit us a certain way, when there's certain circumstances that bring up a certain depth of feeling, I tend to believe there's also something historical there that's getting reverberated. So it's actually an opportunity. Like if you're experiencing, so, you know, on this podcast, I've explored Ariana's possible experience of feeling used and discarded by Tom Sandoval and how devastating that must be for her. Understanding, of course, she has a right to those feelings in terms of the present day situation, but also holding the possibility that this is playing out a familiar pattern for her. And maybe part of her task here is to act rather than pushing those feelings away or trying to minimize them or protect herself from them, hopefully with help and support, to really go deeper into those feelings and hopefully maybe get consciousness around, oh yeah, this is a little familiar. This is something that's been playing out in my life in different ways. And maybe if I use this as an opportunity to really sort of channel the historical heartbreak, the historical rage, to give my inner child permission to really feel what I didn't get to feel way back when, there can be a catharsis here where I finally move through this. And by moving through it, I get to rewrite the story, which, again, going back to my introduction, that would be the learning and the mastery for her.
Yeah. And one of the things that I lately have been kind of sitting with a lot as a concept is that was then, this is now, in the sense that you can have familiar or similar events that maybe happened 2024 that maybe reminds you of something that happened to you in the year 2000. But the way, even though the event might feel the same, what you might realize is that, but now I'm a different person, and the experiences that I've had since then means that I can now navigate this in a different way. And instead of spiraling, I can actually do something with this that's constructive for me rather than destructive to me. And that happens in astrology where, you know, you have these cyclical patterns, but just because you're having a similar event or astrological cycle like you had in the year 2005, but now you're a different person. You've evolved quite a bit since 2005. So it's also likely that you might go about this or solve it in more quickly, or in a way that's more efficient, or in a way that you don't get as wounded. And that's sometimes one of the beautiful things when we're like, wow, had this happened to me 20 years ago, I would be on the floor in tears. But now here I am, like, yeah, I kind of stung a little bit, but I'm golden.
Yeah. And I think, again, you're speaking to the mastery, right? This is what we're doing over these lifetimes. And I think to kind of frame this in terms of the classic examples of the wounds that we incur as children, I think, you know, and this is a lot of what I do with my clients when I work with them around what's coming up in their lives and how it reflects pattern. It's when we're kids, obviously we don't have agency. There's so much we don't know. And so these dramas and these wounds, it triggers a real fight or flight response. It feels like life or death. You know, it feels like the end of the world. And so a lot of times we carry that historical fear in us in response to these certain situations. And so for me, the spiritual process of being an adult is being able to essentially like kind of separate those two things out of, yes, this is bringing something up in you that's triggering a very young historical fight or flight response that made sense at that time. Now you get to use free will and adult consciousness to separate out the story you internalized back then from what's going on right now as an adult, to reparent yourself and understand this is no longer the end of the world because you're an adult now. You do have agency. You can advocate for yourself.
Yeah, a quote that I recently came across like a month ago that I really liked that speaks to all of this was, "The wound is not your fault, but healing it is your responsibility." And what that brought up for me was that I think for many years of my life, I remember getting stuck on, well, this person wounded me, and somehow thinking that they were responsible for healing me. But when I realized, you know, well, I didn't cause the wound, but I'm the only one who can really do something about feeling better about it or making it less painful, that to me was very freeing, because it also just it allowed me to detach from past events or people and realizing that the work is entirely mine to do. And that was very calming.
And again, the notion that it's actually what we're meant to do. So, and again, that doesn't, it's not to say, because I think sometimes people hear this, especially people who've gone through some, you know, really serious stuff. It doesn't let perpetrators off the hook. No. It's not to say that you don't get to have boundaries with people who have harmed you. It's not to say you don't get to say no, press charges, say this isn't right. It's not that other people don't have to take responsibility for what they've done. It's just this fundamental notion, though, that, we're here to go through these challenges. We're here to incur these wounds. And kind of like what you're saying, if you choose to believe in this, our souls are kind of here to take responsibility for what happens to us and to undertake whatever it is we need to do on the healing journey in order to heal, in order to master these lessons. And actually, kind of what I just said is a prime example of what I mean. When we talk about this sort of thing, if there is someone who's like, you know, again, really maybe gone through something that's really deep and serious, you know, in terms of like not bypassing feelings or toxic positivity, I often think that part of what they're meant to go through is to reclaim the righteous rage, you know, is to reclaim the voice in them that says, this isn't okay, and to claim that powerful life force energy. In fact, that's often the work that I'm doing with a lot of people, which is like, let's support you to actually get in touch with the righteous rage in you, because that's actually a doorway to all this powerful life force that wants to move through you. And part of your healing might be the voice in you that says, this isn't okay. I'm not okay with it. And now I'm going to take action to fucking do something about it. And by virtue of doing that, you're stepping into a sense of personal power and agency that might be your task to step into in this lifetime. So it's sort of a perfect example of what we're talking about, of like, I always feel like the feelings are the gateway and the portal. Again, it's just kind of a question of what we're telling ourselves about the feelings and then how to work with them.
Yes, totally agree with that.
So before we kind of jump into like the dedicated topic of today, which is Saturn return and using Raquel as an example, I just thought maybe I'd sort of give people a little bit of context on you, because this is a fun fact for the listeners at home. We've communicated a lot electronically through DMs. This is actually our first actual face-to-face meeting where we're having a live organic conversation. So I know you a lot through your content. And one of the things that I've always responded to in your content, and I feel like there's kind of a point of connection between us, is that I think we're both people who are in spiritual fields, but I think we approach it. And I mean, people could disagree with me. This is my experience of myself. I think we tend to approach it in a more grounded, pragmatic way where, for example, I didn't change my name. I'm not wearing a bunch of robes. I don't have a bunch of big crystals, you know, surrounding me. I mean, I am very spiritual, but I've also led a very real world life, working in the entertainment industry, being an entrepreneur, being in therapy, all the things. Mm-hmm. And I actually sort of love that about my brand of work, is that I feel like it does really fuse maybe what you'd call lofty spiritual concepts with really pragmatic real world application. And I see something similar in your content where it just feels very no bullshit. It feels very non-reactive, to use your word. It's less so on the drama and it's more about practical application. So I guess I'm just curious if you just want to say a little bit about how you came to find astrology and, yeah, sort of what that journey was like for you as someone who does feel, I'd say, grounded in the quote unquote real world.
Yeah. So I grew up in a household where astrology books were very prominent. My mother, who's now in her 70s, she's now a professional astrologer. But growing up, she wasn't. She had an interest in it. But I remember being 6 years old and just being drawn to those books. So at 6 years old, I knew that I was a Gemini. I knew that if you were born on July 28th, you were a Leo. So like I was just always into it. When I turned 14, my parents, their birthday gift to me was a birth chart reading with an astrologer. So that was like my first exposure to, oh, there's a whole birth chart and there's all this other stuff. When I went to college at 18, I started teaching myself astrology, and then I started getting readings from professional astrologers in New York, some of whom took me under their wing, and because they could see that I wanted to learn more. So I kind of got a little bit of like an apprentice kind of experience with them. And then my first job out of college, word got out that I was into astrology, and then people started coming to me and being like, oh, I heard that you read charts. And I said, well, I mean, I'm learning. But that was great because what it turned into was I would tell people, okay, take me out to lunch. This is back when lunch was like $9, right? Take me to lunch and then pay for my lunch and I'll read your chart. And that was like a win-win because for them, they were getting a chart reading for $9. And for me, it was great because I always say that when you're learning astrology, there has to come a point where you need to start practicing everything you've learned. A lot of my greatest insights and learnings have come from actually reading charts and knowing what I did right, what I didn't do right, or whatever it might be. So then from that point on, you know, I had a bachelor's in journalism, a master's in nutrition. I was a dietitian, the whole deal. But in the background, astrology was always there as either something I would read about in my spare time, or I might have clients here or there. Fast forward to 2019, I was very dissatisfied professionally. And that's when the thought came to my mind one day, well, why don't I try doing astrology as a business? And that was 5 years ago. And now here I am. One thing that you just brought up that when I was thinking about, okay, so I'm going to do astrology as a business. And of course, then you think about what's my brand or what am I offering? And my whole thing was practical, pragmatic astrology that people can do something with. So that's why that whole thing of being down to earth and being realistic is key to who I am. Because to me, it's about, okay, here's some astrological information that you can use in your day-to-day life. So I don't get into, you know, the whimsy and all this nonsense about, you know, like, oh, there's a portal opening on August 8th. There are no portals in astrology. I don't know where that came from. There are no portals in astrology. But unfortunately, one of my frustrations has been that that's the content that gets a lot of engagement on social media, but I refuse to go there because to me that denigrates what astrology is really about, which modern day astrology has a lot of humanistic psychology built into it. It's about awareness and insight. So to me, anything that cheapens it is really problematic.
Well, yeah. And of course, I've been guilty of this in my own life, too. But yeah, I mean, I think a lot of it speaks to the desire for magical thinking, right? Because then we get to bypass, again, the things that maybe feel a little more sticky, the things that feel a little bit more uncomfortable. You know, sometimes we don't want to have to surrender to it's like Frodo in Lord of the Rings. He doesn't want to go on that journey and risk his life and trudge towards Mount Doom. But like, that's what spirit is asking of him. And that's what's facilitating him stepping into something sort of deeper. Yeah. So I think sometimes there's just a resist. We long for the magic, but sometimes we don't want to hear what the magic actually has to ask of us in sort of our real world daily lives.
Yeah. And ultimately too, one thing I always say as well is that as much as I am an astrologer and I love astrology, one of my go-to sayings is ultimately astrology should enhance your life, but it should not run your life. Because there can also be this narrative, which I don't ascribe to, of, for example, well, Mercury's retrograde, so you can't do anything for 3 weeks. And it's like, no, life goes on. Sometimes you have to start a job when Mercury's retrograde. I've had to do it. I go on vacation when Mercury's retrograde. I don't stop my life. Now, I might build in maybe some backup plans or manage my expectations of what could happen. And that's where astrology can help. But I don't buy into this thing of, because this is happening, don't you even think about doing X, Y, or Z. Now, there are some exceptions in the sense that, you know, one of the services that I offer is when you have an important event in your life, and I'm talking you're opening a business or something of that nature, we do look at certain times that are more auspicious. Because in astrology, anytime that you begin something, you are basically creating an energetic blueprint of what the potential is. So there are certain dates, even weeks, when, for example, launching a business would be very difficult. Had you waited another 6 weeks, it would have been easier. But I'm talking more about just routine day-to-day things. Like, you know, I'm not going to refuse to go to Whole Foods because the moon is in Aquarius. Like, that's the nonsense that I'm talking about. Like, you have to live your life.
Yeah, and it's like I'm always saying too, as someone, I used to seek out a lot more what we might call peak experiences in my own healing journey of, you know, trying all sorts of different things and traveling places and workshops and medicine circles and all this and that. And I'm not knocking any of that. Everything contributed to the journey that I've been on. But I remember sort of even back in the day, always sort of being aware that Monday comes knocking again at the start of each week. And no matter what kind of journey I go on or medicine circle I'm sitting in or shamanistic experience I have, at the end of the day, I'm still waking up Monday morning in my apartment in Los Angeles, and I got to walk the dog and I got to pay the bills. And I often really believe like the deepest spiritual task. I mean, truly, I really believe this is showing up in the day to day of our human lives. Because again, that is why we are here. We are here to struggle in a way with human limitation. That's where the challenge and the conflict exists. Again, that's where the learning and the mastery exists. So to your point, yes, I think all of these opportunities that we have for diving into ourselves, for exploring ourselves, for receiving messages, that's all well and good. But I think ideally it's in service to bringing us back to the reality of our lives, the reality of our feelings, being in the trenches with our fellow men and women and kind of like the daily grind of life, rather than as kind of a magical escape from, you know, really what we're here to do.
Yeah. And also, as much as I love astrology, I also say it's one of many tools. It's not the end all be all. It has a lot to offer, but there's other tools that also offer other things. So I always encourage people, yes, astrology, and also if you want to look at tarot and numerology or you know, an empath, like we might be in similar energetic fields, but we offer different things to different people. So, you know, astrology is not going to answer every single question, nor should it. It should be just one of them. In the same way that, you know, you have a dentist and an eye doctor and a dermatologist, same thing with this. You need different modalities because they each will do something different for you.
Yeah, exactly. And then to me, again, this is kind of where like, this is the setup of the game. It's like there are all these options. There's these roads we can go down. Spirit kind of sets things up for us, but then it lets our free will run amok. And there's kind of a buffet of life in front of us. And so we get to kind of check in with ourselves and find out like what's right for right now. Okay, so I love all that. So as far as kind of like transitioning into our primary topic, I thought we'd sort of start more macro and then kind of hone in more micro.
Yeah.
But again, you know, astrology, we all generally know what it is as a general topic, but you know, I think there's sort of so much that we take for granted about it, especially, you know, I mean, we think about, for example, growing up and seeing the horoscopes in the newspaper. I'm just kind of curious, and I'm laughing just because I don't know if this is like a ridiculous question to be lobbing at you, but if you were to just big picture, broad brushstrokes, just explain to someone very simply, what is astrology? Like, what exactly are we talking about here when we say the field of astrology? How would you define it to someone?
Yeah, I would say astrology is the analysis of planetary cycles and movements and their impacts on us as individuals, but also us as a collective society.
And it's the idea that things that are happening on the planetary level have an impact on us as individuals and as a collective. And so I would further extrapolate from that. Everything is connected, and we're kind of reading the cosmic ebbs and flows as a way to get, yeah, information about what I'm kind of calling perhaps our particular maps of predestination.
Yeah, I would say it's a symbiotic relationship between things in the universe or in the galaxy. You know, one of the main concepts in astrology is as above, so below. And then a lot of times I'm somebody who, as I've gotten older, now that I'm in my 40s, I love saying now as I've gotten older, because I turn 42 in a month. So I'm all about that. But I think also as I've gotten older, I have no problems with saying, I don't know. In the sense that if somebody were to ask me, well, prove to me scientifically, how does Jupiter's movement affect? I'm like, I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. And because I don't think we have the capacity right now. Now, one thing that I would say is that I would posit is, well, I mean, consider the fact that we know that the moon has an influence on the tides here on Earth, right? So we know there's a relationship there. So there, I would gather there must be some kind of energetic relationship. But I think it's perfectly fine to say, I don't know. And sure, believing in astrology requires a leap of faith. And if you're looking for the scientific journal article that I can point you to, there isn't one. And I'm okay with that. You know, back in the day, I used to get very defensive about that. And now I'm very much in the space of, I will say this, everybody is allowed to believe whatever they believe and have whatever opinion they want. However, I will say, before you make a decision about astrology, my only ask is please get a birth chart reading with a good astrologer. And then you're free to make up your mind however you want. If you do that and you still think it's all a bunch of nonsense and you're not into it, I respect that. But what I don't like is when people think astrology is, as you were just saying, reading the daily horoscope in the back of a newspaper, because that's not really astrology.
Yeah, I mean, to me, on a personal level, astrology has just always made so much sense, because even just looking at things from a scientific perspective, if we take into account the Big Bang Theory, the whole universe started in one little particle, right? So, I mean, and then it kind of exploded outward. So to me, it just makes so much sense. Of course, there's a deeper connection to all this because it generated from like one little particle or nucleus in the first place. Of course, that's just my personal point of view. And I also think it's so interesting. I mean, this is a bit of a digression, but, you know, I will say for me, I've just always had this intuitive sense for myself that science and mysticism are not mutually exclusive. To me, they've always felt like they go hand in hand. And I just think it is really interesting. I don't know how many people know this, but there are so many of like our most famous, prominent physicists and scientists who are also self-described mystics and spiritualists. Albert Einstein, Isaac Newton, I mean, so many. And I mean, Albert Einstein, the way he talked about it was, I'm scientific enough to know there's so much that I don't know. So of course, in the place of humility and acknowledgement that there's so much I don't know, I'm sort of so open to things that are beyond our current comprehension. And I've just always felt like it's the height of arrogance to assume or believe that just because we can't see, touch, hear, or feel something, it doesn't mean it's not real or it doesn't exist. I mean, look, this is a whole separate conversation where there's a way that science can become dogmatic. And I think my perspective, people can kind of hide behind it. But having said that, I also agree with you that I have no demand on anyone to agree or believe in anything, because again, I think we're all here to embody different energies and to have different perspectives. So for me, it's like, great, you know, believe whatever the fuck you want to believe. It's just, to me, it's always made so much sense.
Yeah.
Okay, great. So having said all that, let's kind of like stop the focus down like a camera f-stop and jump into Saturn return. So like I said, this is something we hear about all the time. Like I said, I mention it, even though I don't really fully know what it is. So can you just sort of break down? I mean, I think there's sort of two things I'm curious about. One, just like this planet of Saturn, like that's kind of the star of the show here. So I have to imagine the planet Saturn means and represents something. So what is Saturn return, both in terms of like what's going on like an astrological level, and then what does it actually mean for us as human beings on these soul journeys?
Yes. So one thing to visualize is that basically when we're born, when you have your birth chart done, that is a snapshot of the sky when you were born. So, because understand that the sun, moon, and planets are in constant movement. So when you're born, we freeze time and we say, okay, so when you were born, the sun was here, the moon was here, Venus was here, Saturn was here. But everything is in constant movement. So every planet has a return. What a return really means is that the planet has done a full orbit and now is back to where it was when you were born. And so Saturn takes approximately 27, 28, 28 and a half years. And that's why everybody has their first, because there's more than one, everybody has their first Saturn return, potentially as early as 27, potentially as late as 28 and a half. And you might wonder, well, hold on, that's like a 1.5 year difference. Why? It has to do with the fact that, you know, planets retrograde. So sometimes the orbit might be a little bit faster. But in the late 20s, Saturn returns to where it was when you were born. Now, if we look at Saturn as a planet, because every planet in astrology represents different archetypes or themes. Well, first of all, Saturn is the planet in astrology of adulthood. So astrologically, we are not considered adults until our first Saturn return. And that's why the Saturn return is so significant, because that's when you really begin adulthood. But Saturn also has to do with discipline, responsibility, dutifulness, growing up, structure, order. So some people have an easier time with Saturn return because right around the time of it, they are already embodying the energy of Saturn. And because when Saturn returns to where it was when you were born, it's reactivating things in your chart. So if in your chart, Saturn is getting along with things and supporting them, it's like, wow, Saturn came back to where it was when I was born. And in doing so, it's once again getting along with my Sun and my Mars and my Venus. So things are working out. For other people, they struggle with it because right around the time of their Saturn return, they are avoiding responsibility or they're shirking responsibility. They are not disciplined in any way. They're not accepting any kind of obligation or structure in their life. And also because if Saturn in their birth chart is very afflicted or very challenged, Saturn is returning to that point in the chart where it's kind of getting into a very combative dynamic with other things in the chart. So that's why some people can have a very positive experience and others have a much more problematic one.
This feels maybe like an organic point to bring Rachel Levis into this. And, you know, I guess full disclosure, you looked up her chart based on her birthday, but we don't have kind of significant details of her birthplace or birth time. So obviously,
or time, right?
That's going to kind of limit things. But I'm just so curious in terms, because, you know, you could say that assuming Scandoval is happening right around her Saturn return, that at least initially this was a quote unquote negative, or we could definitely say it's difficult, challenging thing for to occur for her as her Saturn returns and welcomes her into adulthood. So I'm just curious right off the bat, is there anything that you see in her chart that either reflects exactly what you're talking about of like Saturn in conflict with certain things at the time of her birth that are now playing out in adulthood, and or just general themes that she might be with, you know, her free will, not stepping fully into things that would then like lead to the situation she found herself in?
What's really fascinating in her case is that in her birth chart, and we know this for a fact because this is something that is not going to be dependent on time. So she has, when she was born, Saturn and Venus were approximately 120 degrees apart. In astrology, 120 degrees is called a trine, T-R-I-N-E aspect, and that's actually harmonious. But what's fascinating is that when she had her Saturn return, Saturn was also harmoniously linking to her Venus. But the thing is that Saturn, even when it's harmonious, is asking you to take accountability. So what that tells me is that that Saturn return was, because also Saturn is about maturity and having wisdom and having foresight. So this Saturn return for her was supposed to bring up an auditing period of whether her relationships at the time, her romantic relationships, were actually contributing to her stability and to a sense of structure in her life. And if they weren't, in true Saturn fashion, they were supposed to be removed from her life. So the fact that my understanding, I'm not totally caught up on the whole Vanderpump stuff, but my understanding is that as a result of this, she and Tom broke up, which actually was the best possible thing that could have happened. And hopefully, if she were a client of mine, what I would ask her is, what did that Saturn return do for you as it relates to how you thought of what you wanted out of a relationship and what you were willing to put up with. Because Saturn is also very much a planet of boundaries. So when you have a Saturn return that activates your Venus in a quote-unquote good way, there's supposed to be a lot of work there about you realizing your worth. So that'll be my question to her, because Venus in astrology is also about not just romance, but it's about your self-esteem and your self-value. But Saturn is, even when Saturn is quote-unquote helping you out, I always give the visual, Saturn is like a boot camp instructor. Saturn is not a planet that has a lot of empathy. Saturn will say, I'm here to get you in shape. You're going to do what I'm going to tell you to do. There's no cutting corners. There's no breaks. But if you work with me, by the time you're done in 3, 6, 9 months, you will be in much better shape. But all of that is happening spiritually and emotionally.
So this is fascinating. So just to make sure I'm hearing you correctly, even though Scandoval obviously was hugely difficult for her, and again, on the surface, looks like a total disaster, you're actually saying in terms of her chart, Saturn was in harmony with her Venus, which I guess for the sake of saying this out loud, again, I'm not an expert. I'm assuming Venus has to do with like romance and love. And yes. Yeah, okay. I mean, there's a couple of things I want to get into, but even that right there is just so fascinating because it's a harmonious relationship, which I feel like usually people would maybe make the assumption, oh, that means I'm going to find the love of my life and I'm going to be skipping through daisies with him or her. For Rachel, it ended up being, again, on the surface, a disaster. But to your point, and this is going to kind of open up another doorway, harmony in the area of love at this point wasn't necessarily supposed to be about finding your soulmate and having a happily ever after ending. It was more about, like you're saying, getting congruent with yourself, really sort of using love and relationship as an opportunity to check in with myself. What am I saying yes to? What am I not saying no to? Where is my self-worth? Where are my boundaries? I know you're not overly familiar with the situation, so I'll kind of fill you in on sort of her journey in a moment, just in response to kind of what you're bringing in. But yeah, there's something there that just felt really important to name, that harmony in this point did not in any way mean like typical happy ending, but instead, like you said, the invitation into this moment of inventory for her and using love as a vehicle for that.
Yes. And it's also why I say that in astrology, context is key. Because if you were in a very healthy relationship and you have a Saturn return getting along with your Venus, that could very much indicate the relationship evolving, or maybe you get engaged. But the whole thing is that Saturn, that's why I always use the term auditing. Saturn is the auditor. If you are in a situation that is not good for you, Saturn is supposed to be teaching you, okay, you need to have more limits. You need to be more realistic. You need to have more structure and boundaries. How are we going to do this?
Okay, this is so interesting. So what I'll fill you in on is, yeah, you know, Rachel really did, to my mind, you know, there's a lot of debate around the legitimacy of it, the authenticity of it. I think at the very, well, look, I'm not going to speak for other people. To my mind, I've watched her really undertake what I consider to be an intentional process of really sort of trying to learn from this. Like, just for whatever, the disbelievers or the naysayers out there, is it being done 100% perfectly? No, of course not. She's young. She's a human being. But to me, it really seems like she's really checked herself into like a facility. It was originally a 45-day program. She actually chose to stay a full 90 days. She chose to cut things off with Tom Sandoval, which she didn't have to do because initially they were still in contact for a while. She followed the advice of her therapist. She went no contact with him. She, like I said, she extended her stay. She ultimately chose not to go back to the show, which was a choice for her to make. And then through all this, and again, this is sort of a controversial thing that she's done. Some people have issues with it, but she started a podcast specifically to kind of speak to her experience to reclaim the narrative after she became kind of one of the most reviled people in the country. And I think also to have a platform to respond to what was being said about her on the show, since she was like no longer going to be on the show. I just sort of mentioned that because she's using the podcast, at least in part, to really illuminate her own journey and to hopefully kind of bring help to other people who might identify with her and the things that she's going through. So I say all this just to say that it sounds like, based on what you're talking about in terms of her chart, that she is at this point using her free will to accept the invitation that's being offered to her to kind of look at the choices she's made in love and the disastrous road they took her down, and to really kind of start looking at, why did this happen? What's going on? What needs to happen here? How do I use this as like a deeper vehicle for kind of understanding who I am and who I want to be in this lifetime?
Yeah. And what's also fascinating is that, you know, in most instances, you have concurring astrological cycles taking place. So while she was having this Saturn return and this Saturn activation of her Venus, she also had the planet Uranus 120 degrees away from her sun, which that happens every few decades. But, you know, Uranus is the planet of reinvention, of freedom, of getting unbound from ties that are unhealthy. So to me, the fact that, you know, one of her reactions to this was to kind of go into hiding and maybe come out the other side, reinvented, cut ties with Sandoval, that's very much in line with what was happening to her son during this time as well. So there were multiple opportunities, and whether she knew it or not, because I don't know if she's into astrology, maybe she has an astrologer, but she did exactly what she was supposed to do during that time. So from my vantage point, she completely passed the test.
Okay, yeah, I have so many questions. So my first question, because I really do want to get into that aspect that you just mentioned, which again, is kind of like the free will of it all and the choices that we make, but I'm going to bookmark that for a second. One of the things I'm so curious about is, because obviously we've identified that this, the sort of the DNA for what she went through with Scannaval was literally in her chart. It was embedded in the harmony between her Saturn return and her Venus. My first question for you is just my own awareness. It relates to my own awareness of just how big this was. Like, this wasn't just like, this wasn't just, you know, a bump in the road in the private life of some woman who no one knows. I mean, this was a large scale. I mean, it felt like it became like an international drama that was playing out that was just so larger than life and played out on such a grand scale. And so I'm just curious, that level of sort of bigness and visibility, is there any DNA of that in her chart? Does that specifically tie into life themes for her that you see? Or like, what do you make of that for her? Or is that possibly just the product of the decisions she made along the way in her own free will?
I would say that relates to, it's not so much that it's in her chart, but the fact that while this blew up, she had Uranus, which Uranus is the planet in astrology that relates to earthquakes, lightning, electricity, things that happen out of the blue and very suddenly, activating her sun. Yes, there's the element of renewal and renovation, but also that when you're under a Uranus cycle, things can change overnight. And it's not inherently good or bad, because I've seen it in people's charts where they go from obscurity. You're a singer-songwriter who goes from obscurity to then suddenly you land a publishing deal with some huge record company. And then 2 weeks later, one of your songs is out. But it could also be this, where suddenly overnight she became, and I'm not going to go down this rabbit hole all the way, but to me, there was a lot of misogyny around that as well. I felt like she got all the blame. And I feel like Tom Sandoval didn't. I thought I was very disturbed by this very old school narrative. Oh, the woman who, you know, broke a home. It's like, no, I mean, are we not going to talk about the fact that Tom Sandoval is likely a raging narcissist who uses people and discards them? Like, that conversation was missing. So I kind of felt bad for her, to be honest.
And so even something like that, because I'm so taken by the relationship between the macro and the micro. So if we even sort of hold her as occupying kind of a place in the collective where, in a way, you know, she became the other woman with the scarlet letter who was sort of shamed for what she did. There's a way that she's now actually sort of taking that back. She went into hiding, I would say, in a good, like in a healthy, conscious choice type of way, not like in a, I'm hiding in shame, I'm going to disappear forever. She went into hiding in a, I'm going to work on myself, I'm going to accept this invitation to take inventory. Now I'm emerging from hiding. Now I'm speaking to my experience. Literally, the title of the podcast is Rachel Goes Rogue. It's like, basically, I'm not going to be silenced. So there's a way in which, again, whether you agree with it or not, at least her intention, and I think she's succeeding for some people, she's sort of reclaiming the narrative of the shamed other woman. And I'm just curious, are these themes that you can see playing out in terms of her birth chart or in terms of what might be forecasted as like a larger life journey and lessons to be learning?
Yeah, two things. One is that in her birth chart, she has her son just a few degrees away from an asteroid named Chiron. And Chiron is a wounded healer. And a lot of times when somebody has Chiron very close to their son, it means that at some point in their life, there's going to be a pretty significant wound around your identity and who you are. And like your identity being very, like your entire identity being very painful for you and you having to completely reemerge and like go through some kind of metaphorical death to heal. But the healing isn't about your family or your career. It's about who you are. And then she also has in her birth chart an opposition between Mars and Neptune. And you see, Mars is the planet of your desires. It's how you go after things. When Neptune is opposite your Mars in your natal chart, one of the things you're going to have to deal with and address is really being assertive, owning your actions, and also making sure that what you're doing is out of your own desire and not to please somebody else or to be sacrificial or to be a martyr. So I think there's also a lot in her chart here, and I think this came up in Scandoval, about how much of it was her actually desiring something versus, in a way, either being talked into it, being convinced, or kind of being used as a pawn.
Yeah, it's interesting because my take on Rachel, obviously, look, there's a lot of powerful energy that wants to move through her. And I think we're seeing that activated more and more. I think we've just hit the tip of the iceberg. And again, I don't say this in any kind of judgmental, critical way. She's quite young. And as I said before, I think she's already doing a lot. I mean, look, Tom Sandoval is a 41-year-old man. He's not even doing a fraction. Whether you think it's misguided or flawed or not, one thing I feel like people cannot take away from her is she is at least trying, I feel anyway. Tom Sandoval is barely even trying. You know what I mean? So here she is again, not put in a situation. She got herself in the situation, but finds herself in a situation where scorned, reviled, and yet still kind of, and to me, this is a testament to that spirit within that I'm talking about, that powerful. That's the thing. She's so interesting. And I think this is why she was so provocative for a lot of people. It felt like there was such a huge gap between the face that she was wearing, which was the tongue-tied, throat getting choked up, I can't even make a toast without stumbling over my weird words and being trepidatious and being fearful, that kind of sort of social persona that she had, which, by the way, I believe was very real for her in her conscious mind. But then underneath that was also the woman who was capable of like conducting this affair in secret. But not only that, this woman who now is like going through something that certainly the people pleaser in her would be devastated by, you know, humiliated by. Again, I have to imagine a lot of people would have just run for the hills, never to be heard from again. We're sensing this power that I've always felt in her just in the very fact that she is reemerging, dusting herself off, saying, hell no, I'm still here. And actually, I'm going to use this to try to find my voice. Like I said, I think we're just sort of seeing the tip of the iceberg. And I think the continual challenge for her or invitation for her in this lifetime will be accessing deeper and deeper levels of that power. And what I kind of interpret as like a powerful, dark feminine energy, I think she's just getting started. But that's always been my sense of her, is that inner conflict.
And what is so fascinating, earlier you were saying how a lot of times the things you pick up on, which happens often, right? You might DM me and you're like, hey, what do you see in this person's chart? What you just said is exactly in her birth chart, because in every birth chart, we have what is called the North Node. The North Node is not an object. It's not a planet. It's not an asteroid. It's a point that we calculate based on the elliptical orbit of the sun and the moon. But the North Node represents what you are meant to learn in this lifetime. Now, the North Node is kind of like your North Star, but the catch 22 is that initially as you approach the North Node, it's very new to you. It's very uncomfortable. So often it's like with your North Node, the idea is you want to very gently, very slowly inch towards it. Because if you try to just make a run for it, you're going to kind of be traumatized and be like, I hated every moment of that. But you're supposed to get closer to it. She has her North Node in Scorpio. Scorpio is the sign of, I always say Scorpio is like the metaphorical cave. Scorpio is a sign of trauma, crisis, intensity. It's possessiveness, jealousy, all the yucky stuff that we don't want to look at. Scorpio is shadow work. Scorpio is really going down into the darkness and dealing with all that foundational root stuff. That's where her North Node is. So speaking truth to power, shining the light on the stuff that nobody wants to talk about, the dark feminine, like that's all Scorpio. And that's where her North Node is. That's what she's supposed to increasingly do more and more of to fulfill her mission in this lifetime.
Okay, yeah. So I love all this. I mean, there's a few things coming to me at once. So yeah, I mean, it would suggest then that, you know, again, in terms of predestination, the lessons she's here to master, that yeah, like that she's very much on track in the sense that obviously, she sort of came into this lifetime conditioned in certain ways to, it almost feels like to disassociate, you know, with that part of herself, that relationship to the dark feminine, that relationship to the shadow. I mean, I want to sort of speak on this in a moment, but what I'm so aware of with her is the severity of that gap. Because again, like, I feel like all of us, right, we navigate certain struggles and themes and conflicts. But what's so interesting to me about her, like I said, is the severity of that gap. This isn't just like someone who was kind of like living in the vicinity of her true depth and power. And there's just kind of a few tweaks that need to be made. It really feels like she shoved something in herself so deep down and then was playing a part that was so far removed from the truth of who she was. I have to imagine as a vehicle for this sort of like there's going to be a special type of learning in the integration of these two very kind of polarized opposites, we might say. But the DNA for this is laid out in her chart. So it's almost like we could see it as born into a certain lifetime that conditions her to make this split from her native energy, we could say, or this part of her that has facility with the dark feminine and the shadow side of life. And then Saturn return, her Saturn's coming right back around to initiate her into adulthood. There's that harmony between, as you said, Saturn and her Venus. And so it's the moment where it's inviting, it's like everything blows up in her face. So she can now go back and look at, okay, wait a second. Like you said, how did I get here? And through the navigation of that question, start investigating these themes around what is my relationship to the dark feminine? Where and how and why did this get shut down? How do I start working with this in a new way? And this is kind of what I was talking about earlier around, I have to imagine there will be an integration there where Rachel, you know, she's so funny because it's like, I don't know if this was before she reclaimed her name, Rachel, but one of my guests, Kirsten, who I had on last year to talk about all this, she was sort of talking about Rachel and Raquel being a real life version of the two different Sandys from Greece and how there's sort of like the good girl, you know, who's got like the beret, yeah. And then there's Sandy who comes out at the end in the black leather pants and is like, tell me about it, stud. But I just have to imagine that part of her soul work in this lifetime is something about the particular kind of learning she's going to get from that integration of like the skills and strengths she developed as like the good girl, the pageant girl, the one who dots her I's and crosses her T's, and then this sort of like deeper, darker energy that knows how to navigate like the shadow side of things.
And what's especially fascinating about her chart and why the Scorpio thing is really important for her to dive into is that she has her sun in Virgo, which Virgo is very much about. Now, I always say every sign is on a spectrum that goes from healthy to unhealthy, or it goes from evolved to unevolved, right? So you could be an evolved Virgo or an unevolved Virgo. But my point is that Virgo is very much a sign that can get into this thing of like the shoulds. And this is who I'm supposed to be so that people can like me. And this is all that stuff. She then has her moon in Sagittarius. So Sagittarius, at its best, can be this very, you know, fun, adventurous energy. But unhealthy Sagittarius doesn't like to sit with emotions or process emotions. They'd rather be like, yeah, it's fine, whatever. And then she has her Mercury, which is how I communicate, in Libra. And Libra is all about, let's just talk about things that are nice and not really touch on things that are like unpleasant. She also has her Mercury challenged by Mars. So she has a Mercury. Mercury in Libra already tells me somebody who by default, and with the moon in Sagittarius, will want to avoid unpleasant conversations and avoid conflict. It can be very much like, I'll just conveniently avoid that conversation. But also Mercury Mars is somebody who has to learn how to be assertive. Mercury in Libra squared by Mars is a Mercury that can be very passive, that can be steamrolled by other people. So that's why her Scorpio stuff is especially important, because the more she leans into the Scorpio North Node, the more the volume gets lowered on all this Libra Sagittarius stuff, which for her makes it so that she doesn't have a voice.
Yeah, so it sounds like there's really something here about what it means to reclaim her voice. And it's just so interesting because, again, I'm just sort of now scanning my brain back to like her origin story. We don't know a lot about it, but she's got this really interesting story where her mother is actually her biological aunt. So,
oh, I did not know that.
Yeah, her biological mother. And we don't really know the circumstances around this, but her biological mother gave her to her aunt. And then she was raised in that family. And so I just say that because, again, not knowing the specifics, they're just from her very inception, there's something there around, I feel like on a certain level, what it means to not be wanted. I have to imagine there was a lot that was being unsaid in the family systems. If there was a sense of feeling in some way grateful or indebted to the family that raised her, I have to imagine that would really contribute to a sense of, I mean, as I'm saying this, I'm literally feeling like a tightness in my throat. Like, I'm not allowed to speak up. I'm not allowed to rock the boat. I'm not allowed to say certain things. And again, I just get curious on an intuitive level. Like, yeah, how was this conversation held in the larger family? What exactly was said about this arrangement? How much was it talked about? How much was it allowed to be talked about? I guess I'm just sort of saying all this because my experience of Raquel/Rachel is just like all these compounding layers upon layers that would, again, make it difficult for her from a young age to seize this voice. And I talked about this actually, I think I did a Raquel deep dive last year, but it was this feeling of like, oh my God, that would be difficult for anyone. But then if you also, as you're saying, have this North Node that's related to Scorpio and dark feminine energy and having a voice and wanting to speak to the shadow side of things, if that's living in you and that wants to come out, and then you're in this environment that is possibly about things just being silenced and looking a certain way on the surface. I mean, that right there is going to be just such a heavy, oppressive silence on your native self.
Mm-hmm. And how interesting, too, that goes back to Mercury in Libra squared by Mars, almost like my voice doesn't really have much power or a sense of that. And then what I was saying earlier with Chiron, the wounded healer next to the sun, my identity. I mean, I would imagine that that has to do something to you where your biological mother gives it to your aunt. That's an inherent wound. Not to mention, too, that in astrology, the sun and the moon both represent our parents. And, you know, in old school astrology, which I don't abide by, there was always a rule that the sun is always the father, the moon is always the mother, but that's not accurate. So when I see sun Chiron, there's some wound there with one of the parents as well. This speaks to all the layers. And that's why one thing about astrology that I really think is powerful, not that word saying, oh, excusing anybody's behavior, but justifying when you understand maybe what happened in somebody's past or where they're coming from energetically, it gives you context of why they make the decisions that they make, which again, is not to say that they are free of judgment or that we should say, oh, it's okay. But when you start unpacking a chart like this, you can see how this chart could be very seduced by somebody who is very narcissistic.
Well, and it's interesting in terms of different lenses of information. You know, that episode that I just referenced with Kirsten McMillan, we were looking at things through an archetypal lens, and she really navigated all these insane parallels between Rachel as the archetype of Echo and Tom Sandoval as the archetype of Narcissus, and then how that played out. So again, it's just all these different lenses. Okay, great. Well, so let me ask you this. So coming back to the free will of it all, I have two questions about this, one on each side of Scandoval, because I'm always fascinated by this notion of free will and the choices that we make and the way that interplays with our chart. Because, you know, obviously, I feel like this is stating the obvious, our charts aren't super specific, right? It's kind of like there's sort of a general template. And like I said earlier, it's kind of like we get let free within the confines or the construct of the general template. And then we get to kind of see how things reverberate. So I guess my first question is, obviously, Raquel slash Rachel was making certain decisions in her life leading up to Scandoval. And even if we go back before the affair with Tom himself, like being in a relationship with James Kennedy, who was like a volatile personality. And, you know, I think it's fair to say that there's a strong chance that this was a relationship she was probably very invested in large part because of the show, going on the show, getting the fame, then obviously, making the choice to kind of have this love affair with Tom behind Ariana's back. She used her free will to make these choices, right? Then it kind of blew up in her face, even though, as we're seeing, her chart actually viewed this as a harmonious event. I guess I'm just curious, like, for you as an astrologer, do you feel like, in a way, in this place where we're exploring the soul journey as a journey where we do get wounded in a certain type of way, where we get conditioned to make certain choices, where we start to sort of make mistakes that maybe sort of quote unquote mistakes that take us away from ourselves. Do you think in a way that Rachel was meant to make these types of choices that would then interface with her chart in this way so that she could go back and reclaim these things? Or do you think that she could have made different choices along the way that somehow would have resulted perhaps in an analogous inventory, but maybe in a way that wasn't quite so outwardly destructive? Or am I getting lost in the weeds here?
No, I get what you're asking. I think that this is where it is very choose your own adventure, because what could have happened here is that, let's say that maybe Rachel had chosen not to engage with Sandoval. And maybe what could have happened is that perhaps around that time, had she turned down Sandoval, somebody else may have appeared who would have been a catalyst for a healthy relationship that I think would have still led to her realizing, oh, this is what a healthy relationship looks like. And this makes me feel more comfortable exploring certain parts of myself and thinking about past relationships. And so I think she would have still arrived at that Saturn return moment of maybe like, wow, I feel very much like I'm building a foundation with this person. And now as a result of that, I'm thinking about what I want my life to look like in the next 5 years. And maybe that makes me think about what relationship dynamics did I see growing up? And do I want to model those or not model those? So it's still kind of, I'm a big believer that in astrology, all roads lead to the same destination. The thing is that some roads are full of potholes and, you know, there's like a river with crocodiles and like you have to really like be very careful. And other roads are more like you are riding, you know, a bicycle through a very beautiful field full of butterflies. But I think ultimately they do take you to the same questions that you will ask yourself. But obviously there's something to be said that maybe sometimes taking a road that is a little bit more dangerous, maybe it connects you more with your essence, and maybe that's the path you were supposed to take.
Because that's what I'm so aware of. I mean, if she does have a relationship to the Scorpio energy and to the sort of powerful dark feminine energy, I've even said it on this podcast, I'm an outsider who's watching this through TV. I don't know Raquel, Rachel, so obviously take this all with a grain of salt. But, you know, my kind of intuitive sense, just based on the limited info I have, and I spoke about this in the last episode where we explored her, I think the real kind of like, or at least one of the real challenges for her in all of this will be to not just look at this from a lens of, well, I was vulnerable and susceptible to Tom's manipulative ways, and then I sort of made these destructive choices, and that's kind of like the big picture of the story, versus no, there was something. I mean, yes, that's part of it. I do want to say that he was older. I do think he's quite manipulative and skilled at what he does. And also for Rachel owning the part of her that really liked this, you know what I mean? That did feel competitive with Ariana. Sure. That did want to, I kind of just continue to this day get the sense that there's something there. There's some sort of agitation or rage towards Ariana that sort of loved, you know, the thrill of the affair and the secrecy. That this wasn't just, oh, I was just a lost little lamb who was led astray by the big bad man. But there was, this was activating, to our point, the Scorpio in me. And that part of me had a negative intention and part of me fucking liked it. So the reason why I'm saying this is when I hear you kind of lay out this other possible roadmap or timeline, I'm like, but would that then take her into potential contact with what we're calling the sort of darker, more shadow sides of ourselves, like that gets seduced into the drama and the competition and the lust and the baser impulses that we all have. You know what I mean? That we all have. Mm-hmm. Would it take her deep into that Scorpio energy in the same way?
Yeah, and probably not, but perhaps maybe this could have happened 5 years later through another event in her life. And also what I wanted to add to what you just said, you know, again, I think context, not to justify behavior, but just to contextualize with that Chiron aspect to her son and the wound about who I am, I also think that there was something probably about Sandoval that felt like a soothing balm in that it made her feel wanted. And I think, you know, a lot of times I would say in astrology, one of my sayings is, if you don't own your chart will own you. And there's a perfect example where if you don't deal with a Chiron sun wound and realize that, wow, there's a really deep wound in me where I never felt wanted growing up. And as a result of that, now I act out or I do things to feel wanted by people. Well, if you work on that, you're owning your chart. And then, okay, you're like, all right, so blah, blah, blah. But if you don't own that, this will happen where you might end up in situations where you're like, very subconsciously, maybe realizing that this is not good for me, but I love the fact that when I'm around this person, I feel so wanted. And I maybe never, or it's been years since I felt wanted. And this is what I really love about this.
I mean, again, just kind of intuitively, my feeling for her, I felt a very strong possibility that there was something about that triangulation between Tom and Ariana that was perhaps familiar for her in terms of like triangulation between her mom and her dad. And so I guess what I'm hearing from you is that basically, yes, there is a certain predestined template that's baked into our chart. So in the case of Rachel, regardless of whether it's going to happen through Scandoval or it's going to happen through something else, it's pretty much baked into her chart that at the time of her Saturn return, there's going to be some sort of auditing period that is going to be inviting her to really take a look at her relationship to her Scorpio energy, towards her dark feminine energy, and to sort of really take stock about what's going on there, what's working for her, what's not working for her. And where free will comes into play here is depending upon how Rachel is currently and has been interfacing with the circumstances of her life, that will be a huge determining factor of how exactly that plays out. So before you liken Saturn to kind of like a boot camp instructor, so maybe just to answer my own question, if Rachel, for example, is, let's say, making a series of choices that aren't necessarily what we could call in service of her highest self or honoring her deepest truth, then that lesson might blow up into something that's really outwardly difficult and challenging, like Scandoval. So like in this case, the boot camp instructor or the teacher of Saturn, it's almost like if she's a chef, In this case, she's training with someone who's like Gordon Ramsay, right? Like Scandoval is the Gordon Ramsay of the situation, and he's yelling in her face and he's abusing her and he's making her life a living hell. But maybe let's say she was making different choices leading up to this, choices that were quote unquote more constructive, more congruent, more connected to her deeper truth. She would still be going through an auditing period and it still might even be challenging, but rather than be going through this with like a Gordon Ramsay, maybe instead she's going through it with a Tom Colicchio, you know, who's still, you know, going to be tough on her, still going to be teaching her the same principles, but it's just, it's gentler. It's a little bit more supportive. It's just not quite as outwardly grueling or difficult. So again, I mean, I know I'm kind of repeating what you've said, but it's just helping me to synthesize it. And hopefully it's helping my listeners to synthesize it. It's this idea that, like you said, the roads are all kind of leading to the same place. The template is set. It's just that our free will and the way that we navigate this and the degree to which we are or are not accepting the invitations that are in front of us then determines essentially our experience of the lessons, how severe they might be, how difficult they might feel, how outwardly destructive they might appear, versus perhaps the relative ease with which we might go through them. Understanding through all of this, of course, that either way, whether it's a Scandoval where it's like blowing up worldwide and I'm humiliated, or if it's something that's far more gentler in execution and experience, I'm still going to be dealing with the same issues, the same lessons, the same challenges, the same questions. It's just a question of, yes, the tone, the flavor, and the texture of the particular lesson, the particular teacher, which again will then impact what exactly I'm learning from it in the first place.
Exactly. Yes.
So my question to you then, because again, I'm just so taken by this question of free will. Rachel goes through this experience, as we said, went into treatment, walked away from the show, walked away from Tom. Oh, the other interesting thing that keeps coming to me, because you talk about boundaries, she's done something else that's now very controversial, but she's actually filed a lawsuit now against both Tom and Ariana because part of the scandal, basically the way that Ariana found out about the affair was she discovered Tom had illegal...
On Tom's phone.
He had illegally recorded one of their naughty sessions on FaceTime and Ariana found it. I'm not clear on the details. I guess at the very least, Ariana texted it to Raquel or Rachel to say, I'm seeing this. But anyways, she's filed a lawsuit now related to revenge porn and the illegal distribution of like video footage taken without her consent. But it's just interesting because you literally talked about boundaries, you know? Yeah. So to me, it's like, this is an expression of her, you know, this is her stepping into her boundaries. Again, there are people, whether you agree with it or not, this is what she's doing. So it's kind of all on track with what's in her chart. But let's just say, for example, because Rachel has free will, let's just say she succumbs to the demons of her sex and love addiction, flees the Meadows, which is the treatment center she's at, runs back to Tom, goes back to the show. It's like, we're watching her. You, like you said it, it sounds like she's really accepting the invitation and sort of doing everything she needs to do, which presumably that's going to set her on a certain timeline to interface with her chart in what we might call like the most productive or constructive way possible.
Yeah.
But let's just say she doesn't make those choices, then what?
Yeah, what would happen then is that if you don't learn that particular lesson during a Saturn return, you're going to keep repeating that same challenge, but it gets increasingly harder and harder and harder. So it would be a thing where, imagine that she did, there would be even more backlash. There would be, you see what I mean?
Well, what's just coming to me? I mean, so in a way, could you say that's what we've seen play out with Sandoval? Because I don't know exactly what age he was when he went from Aria. Vanderpump Rules came, I think, right around Tom's Saturn return.
Yeah.
But like, let's just, you know, play fast and loose with the numbers, because we are watching him do something so similar to what he did 9 years ago. I mean, even 9 years is so interesting, right? Because cycles of nine, even though it's not falling on his like 9 year, like in terms of, I don't know that it's falling on like 27, 36, 45, but still cycles of nine, right? Nine is a very important number in numerology. You could say that there was an opportunity for Tom in his late 20s to learn something in the mess he found himself in with Kristen at that time and sort of the way he was even wanting to navigate things with Ariana. We could say he did not learn the lessons. And now 9 years later, he's sort of, because the thing is, I mean, again, talking about themes, you know, and I've always said Tom's got this relationship to secrecy. 9 years ago, he had this like little, I'm saying this affectionately, you know, this little sort of chaos demon in the form of Kristen Doty showing up at his workplace with one of his affairs, calling him out. Like there was this force in the world saying, we're exposing you, come out, like come clean, come clean, come clean. We're trying to shine a light on your dirty little secrets, right? And he literally, figuratively fled. Like he fled, sir, with, and of course, Ariana was right by his side. They fled rather than deal with the truth of like his secret world. Here we are 9 years later, and it has blown up even bigger and larger than ever before. And it, once again, it does seem like he's not really willing to learn the lesson. So to your point, he's going to just stay on this treadmill until either he dies or he gets it. And unfortunately, the longer he goes without getting off the treadmill, the harder and more destructive the lesson becomes.
Well, and what's fascinating too is that, you know, when Scandoval happened, Tom Sandoval had transiting Saturn opposite his Venus, which happens once every 28 years. And that is a transit that is a reality check and oftentimes an ending around a relationship. Saturn, as I said earlier, is also the planet of karma. So that was supposed to be, again, Saturn. How fascinating that although it wasn't a Saturn return, Tom Sandoval had a very challenging Saturn transit to his Venus, which again is supposed to be a reality check. Wake up and smell the coffee. We need to fix this. But again, Saturn can only invite. If you don't take up Saturn's invitation to work on things during that time, Saturn will say, all right, well, I invited you to fix this. Saturn will be back in around 7 years to do something else to his Venus, but because he didn't take the opportunity, the dumpster fire will only continue.
Okay, great. So this is actually clarifying stuff for me. So I hope my audience is getting stuff out of this, but I'm getting clarity. So it's almost like, and I explored this in the last episode I did about them, I kind of see Rachel and Tom as two people who went through obviously a shared experience, but are taking very divergent paths, where I feel like she's someone who's really taking this opportunity to try to, like, as we're saying, work with this, to learn the lessons, to accept the invitation. He seems like someone who's just sort of doubling down on like the destructive parts of him. But what I'm hearing from you, of course, regardless of the choices they make with their free will, the template of their chart is the template of their chart. But to your point, based on the choices she's making with her free will, there's a way that certain things are going to reverberate later versus the way it's going to reverberate with him later. So kind of like what you're saying, like there might be another impasse point down the road, but for her, that road might be much smoother and easier because of the choices she's made. Whereas the way that Tom's going to interface with this chart later down the road is going to be even more filled with potholes and alligators and stormy weather.
Yeah, or it's kind of like, imagine that you are going on a road and there's like this huge wall, and then you finally climb on it and get past. And then you realize, oh, okay, for the next time I have a wall like that, if I had a ladder with me, it would be so much easier. So then 5 years later, you're like, oh, this wall again, I remember, all I need, but now I have a ladder with me. So all I have to do is just lean the ladder against this brick wall that has come up, climb the ladder, and I'm on the other side. But if you don't learn the lesson, that wall is twice as tall and you have no tools. So now you're like, ugh, this wall again. I'm totally unprepared. I thought I'd never face it again. Now it's 20 feet instead of 10. All right, here I go. You see what I mean?
Yeah, or maybe even the quality of the wall. Like in one timeline, the wall is kind of like soft leaves with flower buds, and you can kind of just move through it and smell the flowers. And, you know, whereas it's otherwise, it's like a brick wall that's like almost impenetrable, and you have to be taking a sledgehammer to it to get through it.
Right. Or it has like barbed wire up tops where you're going to get hurt. Exactly. So it's really that when you learn a lesson, not that you're never going to see the lesson again, but when you face it again, you're like, oh, I remember this. Oh, there's a piece of cake, and you don't get caught up in all the drama again.
And so again, just speaking to the notion of free will and the choices we make, because the thing is, Tom Sandoval, I feel pretty clear, is not conscious of what he's doing and how he's interfacing with it. Like, I think Tom in his mind, you know, you don't watch the show really.
No.
But, you know, he's doing things like he's hired this breath work coach. And so he's like doing deep breath work where then he's like screaming and in his mind letting out his inner demons. And he's theoretically saying the words, "I'm sorry," to people. Like, in Tom's mind, he clearly would say to people, "I'm learning the lessons. I'm doing what I need to do," right? Whereas I think most of us who watch the show would disagree with him. So yeah, I mean, I guess my question for you is, in our conscious minds, we're going to want to use our free will to accept the invitation and to master the lessons, right? So do you have anything to say about this line between accepting the invitation or not accepting the invitation, our varying degrees of consciousness, like how we work with the circumstances of our lives in a way where hopefully we are accepting the invitation, especially when we can have such deep blind spots over whether we're doing it or not?
Yeah. Are you asking how do we know if we're accepting the invitation or not?
Yeah. I want to speak to that. Like, how do we know?
Yeah. And that's where I think that getting a reading from an astrologer helps, because in order to understand what the work entails, it varies on which planet is impacting you. So for example, having a challenge from Saturn is a very different work than having a challenge from Neptune or Pluto or Uranus. So that's why I think, and I always tell people, I am not a therapist. So often what I will say is, these are the things we need to work on. I recommend speaking with a qualified licensed professional. So I'm not the one providing any kind of therapy to anybody, but I can at least give you the framework of what the themes are. Now, in the case of Saturn, Saturn is about foundational structural issues. So when I hear, and I'm not saying that breath work doesn't matter, but when I hear somebody, and again, I don't know Sandoval from a hole in the ground, but just from what I've seen and known on TV, he seems like a very narcissistic, manipulative person who is not very much in touch with his emotions. But when I hear somebody doing breath work, that would be like if I told you, "Hey, the foundation of your house is crumbling," and your response is, "I'm going to change the color of the living room wall to blue." It's like, okay, but that's not going to address the fact that like the foundation of your house is like sinking into the ground or whatever it might be. In other words, Saturn work is about really doing foundational work on your core issues. Breath work to me is not going to do that. Screaming "I'm sorry" into the void is not going to do that. So to me, it's like, that's a nice thing, but that's not what Saturn is asking. Now, what Raquel did, and I'm not saying she's perfect, but like going into that detox center, can we call it wellness center?
It was a treats addiction. I mean, it's not just like a, I don't know what the exact name for it is, but it's like she was working with therapists. She was treating addiction. It was like a real.
Right. Yeah. It's not like a spa. I totally hear you. Yeah. That is what Saturn work is about. Saturn says, you got to look at your stuff with people who will give you a reality check. You got to deal with foundational issues. So what she did, I'm not saying that she's done, but that's a very Saturn way of looking at that.
I think there's obviously I'm sitting with the question too, because obviously I want to contribute my own possible answers. I mean, there's sort of two things that come to me. One, I'm just so aware, I guess this is literally the work that I do with people, right? It's like when I work with people, it's about, yeah, what's coming up in your lives? How does this reflect deeper pattern in you? Where is this coming from in your psyche? And then how do you work with it essentially to reclaim something in yourself, to learn the lesson, to step into who you're meant to be in this lifetime? And for me, it all comes back to what we were talking about at the beginning. I think for me, there's such a fundamental thing of, how does this actually make you feel? Like, what are the deeper feelings here? Now, this is where my special skill set, and I never know what to call it for now, I'll just say as an intuitive, as an empath, as someone who's able to kind of channel people's psyches, this is where this comes in handy, because what I'm able to do essentially is sort of fast track to the unconscious and really be like, look, these are the feelings that I think are here, that I said, this is the energy that I feel in you that I think has been disowned, that's sort of like generating this circumstance. So if I had been working with Raquel at the time of like, you know, being in a relationship with James or having this secret affair, I have to imagine I would have had a direct line to this strong life force in her and the disowned rage in her and the disowned powerhouse in her. And it's like, okay, this is the announcement. This wants to come online. Let's access this in you. How does this want to be brought to your life in a constructive way? Again, if I had been working with her at the time, it probably would have been around having boundaries with James. It probably would have been around having boundaries with Tom, right? Like, that's how she could have worked with it more constructively. So I'm just saying all this out loud because I think for me, my response to my own question definitely has a lot to do with where is this taking me emotionally? What are the feelings here for me to feel on a deeper level? Because again, feelings and emotion, that's energy. That's energy that wants to move through you. What would I have to feel if I let myself take in this situation all the way? But I think to your point, in terms of people who are maybe out there on their own, navigating situations in their lives on their own, I think maybe two of the fundamental questions here, again, to kind of circle back around to the beginning of the conversation is, yeah, what were the choices that I made that got myself into this situation in the first place? So as an example, you know, a lot of people sometimes find themselves suddenly, and we've seen this play out on TV, in the middle of these contentious divorces. Bethany is talking about this right now. She's got a podcast about her divorce from Jason Hoppe. She fell in love with a guy. It ended up becoming this like brutal drama in her life, the most contentious divorce that got so drawn out. On her podcast, and I want to say, like, Jason Hoppe seems like, for lack of a better word, this feels very judgmental, but, you know, like a bad guy, like he acted like an asshole, you know, like, for sure, that's true. Bethany is now talking in her podcast about the red flags that she ignored. So it's like that for her, if she was exploring this on her own or with the help of a therapist, it's like, okay, yes, Jason did destructive things. No one's arguing that. No one's giving him a pass for that. But still, if I take responsibility for how I ended up here, what yes. were the choices I made along the way? So if Bethany, and I ask this of clients all the time, I'm just like, okay, in this situation, was there any red flag that you ignored? And almost always they say yes. And I'm always like, what was the first one? What was the first red flag?
There you go.
And then once you start to identify like, okay, this is the first moment I remember where I betrayed myself, I ignored an inner knowing, then the question becomes why? Like, what were you afraid was going to happen if you said no? What were you clinging to? What was like, what's the underlying belief? Like, if I say no, you know, because usually it's like, well, if I say no, I lose the relationship. Well, if I lose a relationship, well, what does that mean? But you want to start tracking it mm-hmm. to the underlying core beliefs that you have, the underlying core fears that you have. And then once you start identifying those, I think it's about, well, where did those come from? Why do you believe that? What's the core wound here that needs and wants to be healed? Now, I think to your point, this is the kind of stuff that is often best done with support of some kind. Like, that's
yes.
why there are people who are trained to be professionals. But again, just to sort of start giving a roadmap to people, I know I'm saying a lot all at once. The last thing I'll just sort of say right now is one of my previous guests who I mentioned, Kirsten, she phrased this in a way that I love, which is, how do I take 100% responsibility of my 10%? So even if you're in a situation like Ariana, where you are, in this case, in terms of like the affair that Tom had, you are clearly the jilted party and no one's taking that away from you. It's still about stepping into what was my, like, Tom has the burden of most of the blame for like Scandoval, but in terms of how I ended up here, like my 10% of the situation, how do I take 100% responsibility for that? Again, with Ariana, what's the first moment I betrayed myself with this guy? And then why did I do that? So I like giving people like concrete tools and sort of ways to navigate the stuff to bring it down from the loftier principles into more pragmatic application. So I just think these are sort of ways that people can start looking at the dramas, the conflicts in their lives that I have to imagine are hitting on their astrological predestination and start really taking responsibility. Because the last thing I'll say too is like, we're all seeing it. Tom, bless his little heart, he loves to point, like talk about what other people did and how they did it and why. It's not just him, but it's like, no, Tom, how did you get yourself here? Why did you not break up with Ariana before getting into an affair with Raquel? Why did you not break up with Kristen before starting things with Ariana? Like, stop looking at the other person and bring this back to the choices that you made. Stop trying to pass the buck of why you couldn't and why it was them and why they made it hard. This is about you and your relationship to yourself, your truth, your energy, in the ways and places that you did not let it flow truly, congruently, and honestly.
Yeah, and that's what Saturn is all about. And that's why I call it the auditor. When you're going through a Saturn transit, you need to be looking at yourself very realistically, very objectively. And the whole idea is asking yourself, what did I put up with and why? And it doesn't excuse the person from the fact that if somebody cheated on you 10 times, that doesn't mean, well, it doesn't matter. But the question is, why? What in you allowed that to happen 10 times? And it's not about judging yourself, blaming. It's not about any of that. But it's just about really asking the question, okay, what was that about and what did I learn?
So a follow-up question that I have for you, because you mentioned this, and I've experienced this with clients, because oftentimes with clients, when I'm working with them and we're looking back over the trajectory of their life, I can't tell you how many times there's like this defining moment around their Saturn return, right? And so to your point, a lot of times I'll have clients where something really fortuitous happened, like you said, they get like an amazing job opportunity, they get set on their life purpose, like there's that aspect of it. And then there's other clients where they perhaps, made a decision to marry the wrong person, turn their back on their dreams, and now kind of a lot of their lives are playing out according to that, and they kind of find themselves sifting through the rubble of those decisions. I guess I'm curious, in terms of this conversation about free will, is it the case where... I know I'm talking in absolutes, but I guess what I'm saying is, like, for those people who maybe made that choice to marry the quote unquote wrong person or to turn their back on their dreams or settle for a job that they ultimately don't like, do you see that choice at someone's Saturn return as inherently them not rising to the challenge of Saturn return and doing what they're quote unquote meant to do? Or do you think sometimes they are actually meant to make that choice, to send them on a certain trajectory for the next leg of their life that is then ultimately going to be the source of their learning? Kind of like what I was saying before. It's like that moment when the oracle says to Neo, you're not the one. It's like, yes, actually some part of me is meant to go down this quote unquote wrong road because it's going to pay off.
I was going to say 1,000%, because I think sometimes you look back and you think, well, if I could do it all over again, I wouldn't have married that person. But then not realizing that, wait a minute, though, had you not married that person, A, you wouldn't have all the insight that you have now. And had you not married that person, you wouldn't be so grateful and appreciative for the relationship that you're in right now. And had you not married that person, maybe you wouldn't have started thinking about attachment styles and understanding that, oh, wow, you have a really bad anxious attachment. So that relationship was meant to send you on a journey of self-discovery. And it was all part of the plan.
So there's almost like, I mean, I'm sure there's multiple versions of Saturn return, but I'm almost kind of in terms of the context of this conversation, it's almost like there's two potential experiences of Saturn return. Like in terms of Saturn's coming round to kind of initiate your adulthood. And now this is really going to open the doorway in, you know, what we could call like a potential easeful, positive way where you're stepping into your gifts and your life's journey. And this is going to set you up for the rest of your adulthood. And it sounds like there's almost an alternative version, which is like, yeah, your adulthood's kicking in. We've set a certain groundwork, but now there's still some more lessons to learn here. So Saturn's going to come in. We're going to sort of kick you into adulthood with a certain decision that you're going to make so that you can keep kind of bumping into walls and mucking around. And then we're going to like revisit this at a later time to really...
Exactly. And revisit it and then... potentially then have an evolution of growth. But that's the beauty of Saturn. Every 7 years, you kind of get a little bit of a reflection point to be like, all right, where am I and where do I want to be?
Well, and that's kind of what I want to say. I mean, in a way, these questions are not ridiculous, but I love these questions because I love thinking about this stuff. But I'm also aware, like, the multidimensionality of life is that it's never too late to learn. That's the beauty of pattern, right? We're recreating these patterns over and over because it's kind of like spirit saying, are you going to get it now? To me, it's like the hologram within the hologram, right? If you believe that For example, we go through many lifetimes to learn lessons. And if Tom Sandoval doesn't master these lessons around sex, love, and secrecy in this lifetime, he's probably going to come back into another lifetime to try to get it right the next time. I kind of feel like that happens on a micro level within the lifetime where we play out the patterns over and over because it's spirit knocking on our door over and over and saying, are you going to get it now? Are you going to get it now? So I do want to say, even as I'm framing the conversation in kind of a binary way of like, we have these opportunities and we either take it or we don't take it, I do want to say the opportunity is always there.
Yes.
Do I feel and believe, kind of as we said before, that the longer you go, the more kind of defensive gunk gets accumulated and the louder the pattern gets and it can get harder to navigate it? Yes. But then you also could say, if that's the point where you choose to navigate it, there is a particular type of learning you're going to get from that specific experience that you wouldn't have otherwise gotten. So it is kind of this weird mind fuck where we have this free will, right? And we can make these choices about whether we're kind of learning our lessons or not in this lifetime. But at the same time, if you ever choose to accept the invitation, you could argue that's always the right moment when you were meant to accept the invitation. And the only real, I mean, I don't even want to use this word. I'm trying to think of an analogous word. You guys know, I don't actually mean this word, but like the only real failure is not accepting the invitation in the first place. But even that, who knows? Look, we're not like, we don't know how the universe works. Maybe there was some part of you that was meant to experience a lifetime where you just don't get the lessons. And then that's going to set you up for the next lifetime where karmically there's something in you that's ready to then accept the lesson. So it's an interesting thing, right? It reminds me of how I hold work with clients where it's like, I just do my best to hold everything loosely, to have no demands, to have no outside idea of where it's supposed to go. But we just kind of hold all of this loosely. And it kind of just feels like it's all possibility. It's all invitation. But I think at least the willingness to sort of cultivate some sort of conscious awareness around what our patterns are, what they might be inviting us into, who we're meant to be in this lifetime.
Yeah. And to me, it all comes down to what you just said, which is sometimes you can only make a decision based on what you know at the time. And you might learn new information 3 years later and that changes the decision, and that's okay. But I think it's just about taking the time to really look at your life and wonder, am I heading in the direction that I want to be? And maybe the direction you want to be will change in a few, but that's the beauty of it, that every few years we do get different opportunities to course correct.
Mm-hmm.
But I will say the Saturn return is one of the more significant inflection points. So it's not like they're all equal. The Saturn return is significantly important for that reason. Now, the second Saturn return, which happens in your mid to late 50s, is a different kind of vibe, because the second Saturn return is actually an invitation to remain open and not become a curmudgeon. Because the second Saturn return is saying, hey, you realize you still have several decades left on this planet. So what are you going to do? What are your passions? The second Saturn return is when people are supposed to be realizing, oh, I'm more than just my career. I have passions that I've never pursued in my life. Or what do you want the next few decades of your life to look like? It's a whole different inflection point.
And what age does that tend to be?
56, 57.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. So that's the difference between a lot of people around that age will start saying things like, hypothetically, you know, like, well, I've always wanted to learn how to play guitar, but it's too late. And the second Saturn return is saying it isn't too late. The second Saturn return is asking you, where are you putting unnecessary restrictions on your life? And realize that you're still young in many ways.
Yeah, it's never too late. I mean, I work with people in their 60s and in their 70s. It's never too late. Because again, I mean, depending on how you look at life, if you believe in this idea of spiritual evolution over many lifetimes, if you believe in the idea of karma, it ain't just about this one lifetime, baby. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
It's like you're here to learn lessons, and it's never too late. And it's like I was just saying, it's never too late to impact the larger trajectory of your spiritual journey in this human lifetime and in other human lifetimes.
Yeah.
But maybe, you know, what we can kind of leave people with just in terms of the larger conversation is for those of us who are past our Saturn return, you know, to think back to that age, 27, 28, was there a big decision that you made at that time? Was there kind of an inflection point for you? If there was, like, what choice did you make? Are you satisfied with it now? Are you not satisfied with it now? And again, like, if you're not satisfied with it, why? And what was behind that choice? And what was it in you? Yeah, how do you take responsibility for the situation that you're currently in? And when you can kind of pinpoint the choices that you made that contributed to you being here, really sort of tracking that into, yeah, where did that choice in me come from? What belief is that based on? Where did that belief form? What do I need around this? And again, it's to be gentle and kind and compassionate with ourselves, because the reality is, despite the language I've used, none of us are making mistakes. We're just acting out pattern. And these are just parts of us that need and want to be heard on a certain level. So just like Raquel had a relationship to the dark feminine and the part of her that wanted to be a change maker and wanted to use her voice, like, that was something that needed to be seen and heard, that she didn't have support to be fully seen and heard, came out in a really destructive way. But now she gets to sort of look at that. So again, it's not that we disown responsibility. I talked about this in my last podcast episode about Tom. You do the crime, you do the time. We take responsibility for what we do. We make our amends. We accept the repercussions. And then we get to ask ourselves in our own healing work, why did I do this? Where did this come from? What's the need that's being met? And that's how we really start to work with pattern in a new way. Because the last thing I'll say about all this, Tom, it's never lost on me, again, how huge this got. And I do always kind of, again, I sort of see everything that happens as a reflection of people's fields. And I'm just like, Tom created something big, scandalous, and powerful. And I do think on a certain level that is a reflection of the power of his life force. And whether or not I think he goes somewhere, yes, narcissistic with this, where there is this part of him that's like, oh, you all have what you have now because of me. You know, like, he resents Ariana's success. He resents what Raquel is doing. And I think that that is resentment. And I think that's bitterness. And I think he inflates his own ego in that way. And I do think there's a seed of truth in that, in the sense that he is a catalyzer. Like, he's a cat, like, there's a catalyzer in him. There's an initiator in him. I mean, he did that with Schwartz too. I mean, we saw it where he's like, I brought all this money into your household, Schwartz. And again, it's like he goes somewhere with it that is self-involved, and we could call it destructive. And I also feel like that is a part, like, there's an evolved version of that where he does help initiate people. He does help catalyze people. I guess I'm just saying all this because, again, I just, you know, when I take in someone like him, I'm just like, oh my God, Tom. I'm like, if you could take what, like, this powerful energy that is blowing up your life, that is blowing up other people's lives, and actually get into different relationship with this, you could be doing so much good with this, you know? But we all have that opportunity. All of us have places in us that get destructive. All of us have places in us that we're ashamed of. All of us have our dirty little secrets. But I just want to say, like, there's energy in those dirty little secrets. And if we're willing to get into conscious relationship with those dirty little secrets with help and support, there is energy that wants to flow through those dirty little secrets in a more constructive way. You can't kill energy, but you can work with it differently and you can transmute it. So that's just kind of the space I'm holding in all of this.
Yeah. And I would say, wrapping up, that tying it all together, a lot of it comes down to ultimately the work that I do with astrology, as it goes back to what I said earlier, that everything in a chart can be expressed in a healthy/evolved way, or unhealthy and unevolved. So part of the work in astrology is in looking at your chart and having a conversation around how much of your chart is activated. How much of it are you actually utilizing? I often tell people that a birth chart, to me, it's kind of like your cosmic pantry. And what I mean by that is that all I'm looking at is what are the ingredients available to you. In the same way that in your pantry, you could have the most expensive gourmet bottle of truffle oil that you bought 4 years ago, but if you never opened it and drizzled it on anything, then what's the point? And a lot of people are living out birth charts where only half the birth chart is even being used. And that's when people come to me and they're feeling unfulfilled or unhappy. It's because there's all this stuff in their chart that they're not tapping into at all. So a lot of it is a self-discovery. And like in Raquel's case, Rachel, whatever. I mean, I don't know. In her case, all the Scorpio stuff, it didn't mean that she had to go through Scandoval to tap into it. Had she maybe worked with an astrologer at 22, there could have been ongoing conversations around how you tap into the Scorpio North Node. And she could have avoided all that. And it's not she did anything wrong. Don't get me wrong. But my point is that part of working with an astrologer is in really understanding, are you utilizing the potential and the skills and the talent that are in your birth chart? And that is the key to fulfillment.
I love it. All right, Andy. Well, thank you so much for being here and going on this journey with me.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah. So if people are interested in learning more about their map of predestination, their predestined map, they want to learn more about their birth chart, they want to learn more about what they're here to utilize, where should they find you?
Yes. My website is astrologywithandy.com. That's where you can book readings. I also have 2 online self-study courses that you can purchase there. I also offer one-on-one live classes. If you're interested in that, you can just message me on Instagram. And the only social media that I use is Instagram, and my handle on there is astrologywithandy.
And I'll link all of this in the show notes. And as for me, as always, follow me on Instagram, Jamie Stein, JamieStein. I have exclusive content there that you won't find anywhere else. And yes, go to Andy to find out the map of predestination. And then if you are wondering how to work with pattern in a constructive way and find out even more about the truth of who you are, who you're meant to be in this lifetime, and how to use the dramas of your life to access all that, then go to my show notes. There's a link to my little application to work with me and to set up a little informational call where we can get to know each other a little bit more and we can go from there. You can also read more about my work on my website, hollywoodreadings.com. And just one quick logistical note. I had a few people write me in the last few weeks where their messages went to my spam folder, which often happens. And I'm usually very good about checking my spam folder and redirecting any legitimate messages into my inbox. This time, however, I accidentally deleted all my spam messages before I had a chance to weed out the actual real messages from human beings who were reaching out to me and interested about the work. So if you are listening to this and if you wrote me in the last 2 weeks and you've not heard from me, it is more than likely that I accidentally deleted your email with the rest of my spam. So please feel free to reach out to me again. And I apologize for the oversight. Andy, thank you once again. It was such a joy to have you here.
Likewise.
And as always, message me, email me, DM me with your thoughts, observations, and questions. And we will be back in a few weeks for more soulful exploration of all our favorite reality TV characters and personalities. Okay, guys, see you on the flip side. Bye.